Now on BBC World Service, it's time for Witness. Today we're taking you back to the early 1980s, when a young black American graffiti artist called Jean-Michel Basquiat burst onto the New York art scene. His abstract canvases sold for thousands of dollars, but the more he earned, the more he spent on drugs to fuel his addiction. Tom Esselmont has been speaking to one woman who saw Basquiat become famous.
It's February 1985, and in the bars of Soho in New York, hip-hop is all the rage. Street art is in vogue. The face of a young black painter, Jean-Michel Basquiat, is on the cover of the New York Times magazine.
It was very punk rock before the whole kind of art hip-hop thing exploded. It was kind of the art was sort of very similar to the punk rock flyers. People would just wheat paste stuff up on the street. And Jean-Michel was good at doing that, too.
Gallery owner Patty Astor had got to know Basquiat at a nightclub.
I was going upstairs to the VIP room, of course. And he was on the stairway, and he had that little dreadlocks hairdo, and I just started teasing him about his weird hairdo and kind of flirting with him a little bit, and had no idea he was an artist.
Basquiat had a unique style. His brightly colored paintings fused the primal, skulls and decapitated animal heads, with text, words, slogans, and lyrics. His edgy, untrained style attracted buyers looking for the next big American thing. Basquiat, of Haitian and Puerto Rican descent, had already made a name for himself, painting graffiti on the side of abandoned buildings on Manhattan Island. His tagline was Samo.
He started to get a reputation with his famous Samo paintings all over the East Village walls. Now, at this point, the East Village was just so derelict and bombed out, but we all just ran around in it, you know, with all our different outfits on, and everybody was just making themselves up as they went along. At the time that I'm talking about, in the Mud Club days, the art world was just these horrible, you know, Soho retreads. You know, it was these big white galleries with white wine and white people. And it was all this really boring stuff that you had to be a graduate of art school to understand.
But were the likes of Andy Warhol on the scene?
Actually, that's true. We would run around to see if Andy was at the parties. And then there was also the Warhol stars. So we'd all run around to see if we could see them and meet them, which we did.
Patty asked Basquiat to do a show at her New York space, the Fun Gallery. Paul Schinkel made a film about it.
This is Jean-Michel Basquiat, a Brooklyn-born 23-year-old of Haitian Puerto Rican descent, whose rapid rise from street graffiti artist to international art figure has been one of the cultural wonders of the 1980s.
Basquiat's success began to bring in big money. Fellow artist Andy Warhol became a close friend. No black American artist before him had caused this much of a stir, but he wasn't as expressive in conversation as he was on canvas.
Where did the words come from?
Real-life books, television.
Yeah, and you just skim them and start including...
No, I mean, when I'm working, I hear them, you know, and I just throw them down. It's like, you know, History of Rome in 5 pages, you know?
And so you snatched a few words from it.
Yeah, I didn't snatch them, you know.
They caught your...
They caught my eye, and I took them.
Black jazz musicians, especially Charlie Parker and John Coltrane, also played a role.
He was, you know, was very involved in the black experience. He did some beautiful paintings of relating to the whole jazz history in this country. Actually, when I went to his big show at Nina Nose, which sold out, there were beautiful canvases. And it was the whole thing, the whole gallery was crowded with all these horrible Soho people. And he was in the back. And I went all the way to the back of the gallery, and he was in this little room in the back. And I said, hey, John, you know, show looks great. And we just sat there and listened to John Coltrane, I Love Supreme. And he said, I'm not coming out until they're all gone.
As collectors lined up in New York to buy a Basquiat, the pressure to create mounted. Basquiat was keen on trademarks. Using thick paint, he'd daub on crowns, childlike stick figures, boxing gloves and dollar symbols. Some of his paintings focused on the human anatomy. He'd scribble on disembodied limbs with echoes of Leonardo da Vinci.
I want to do some anatomy stuff.
And then
I went out and bought some books that were about anatomy.
And then you started imitating.
Well, not really imitating, because, you know, but I use them as a source material.
Yeah. So why'd you want to do anatomy stuff?
Because I felt like it.
While some critics lavished the troubled artist with superlatives, others couldn't see the talent.
Whether or not he was a good artist is quite another matter.
Well, was he?
Well, in my opinion, no. I think the evidence is in the pictures. If you look at them, they're badly drawn. They're brash and superficial, as your commentators have said, but in the end, that's what you'd expect from a graffiti artist, but I don't think they'd bear close examination, close scrutiny.
No matter what his critics were saying, Basquiat, now addicted to drugs, was under pressure.
It was a lot of money to be made, and it was kind of a very quick buy-and-sell type of thing. I mean, there were dealers who would could easily sabotage your career. They could buy up your whole next show, and then they dump it on the market and ruin your career.
So there's a sort of irony then in the fact that he was painting these images of how Afro-Americans had been portrayed in society, but at the same time he was being exploited by quite a white-dominated art market.
Yes, and I think, you know, that was his internal pain that led him down the dark path to the drugs.
For Basquiat, a huge turning point came in February 1987, when his friend and mentor, Andy Warhol, died following a gallbladder operation. Basquiat went into a deep decline and never really recovered his ability to paint. He died the following year from a drug overdose. Patty Astor blames an oppressive and increasingly cutthroat art market for the artist's downfall.
I think he went down, you know, very fast.
But what do you think is his legacy?
Oh, I think he intended very much to have a legacy. Because in the end, that's what you live for. It's not the money. It's not all the people running up, you know, to you. It's that you left something on Earth that made a difference and that people will remember. And I got to stop for a minute. I think his legacy is that he's one of the greatest modern artists of, you know, my lifetime. And I think he will go down in history as one of the greatest artists of all time. And that's what he wanted. And that's what he accomplished.
Since Basquiat's death, his paintings have gained value. In 2013, one of his canvases sold at auction for nearly $30 million. His huge body of work continues to tour the globe.
Witness was written and presented by Tom Esselment. If you want to hear more of our history programmes, just go to bbcworldservice.com/witness.
The world comes at you fast, on air, online, on your phone. There's an awful lot of information to process, and let's face it, your time is valuable. I'm Robert Siegel, and all things considered, we cut through the clutter, mining the data to separate the facts from the fluff. All things considered from NPR News, on the clock, every day.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580, and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL AM 580, HD3 Urbana, and streaming online at will.illinois.edu.